We present the News Quiz with your host, Sandy Toksvig.
Hello and welcome to the News Quiz. We start with a headline from the Evening Standard, read by Kathy Clugston.
Woolwich rapper who penned song about shopping in Lidl gets government funding to pursue a career abroad.
And our thanks to Amy Lawson for sending that in. Now let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first, on my right, Andy Hamilton and Hugo Rifkind. And opposite them on my left, Lucy Porter and Jeremy Hardy. Andy, who is not working to protect their jobs?
This will be the public sector workers who went on strike for a day. Teachers and civil servants and the like. Which meant that for a day, some children didn't get taught and some official documents didn't get lost. Some lollipops didn't get ladied. And Cameron is furious because he said the strike was disruptive. She's sort of the point, David. There's not much point going on strike if nobody notices. Now Cameron is talking about amending the law on strikes, and I think his objective is probably to frame a law that says that people are only allowed to strike on their own time. Sort of after working hours, preferably on holiday, abroad. I watched Michael Gove on Newsnight.
Somebody get that snake.
Yeah. I thought it was a gas leak. I watched Michael Gove on Newsnight and he came out with this marvellous moment. He said the outstanding teachers were in favour of his reforms.
Oh.
It must be a lovely place to live, Gove World, mustn't it? Where everyone who agrees with you is outstanding.
But he also said that, Michael Gove said, school children needed to be protected from politically motivated industrial action. You think, well, it's a bit unfair to criticise them for being politically motivated. Of course they are. I mean, it'd be much worse if he went on strike for trivial reasons. unless they change Snickers back to Marathon, I'm not, not going back to work.
Cameron and the rest of Parliament are about to withdraw their Labour for about 3 months, aren't they? This is the weird thing. It is a right to withdraw your Labour. I mean, that's the whole point. And if somebody is self-employed, they quite often withdraw their Labour. You ring a plumber at 7 in the evening and you say, well, I was in all day waiting for you. And they go, yeah, but I had a bit of a late one and then I had to go to my cat's sports day, but I come on Tuesday. And you say, yeah, but the house is underwater. It will settle. It will find its own level. But all these objections to the strikes are so bogus. You get people saying, well, I run my own company and I haven't had a pay rise for 3 years. You think, well, if you run your own company, you've only got yourself to blame, haven't you? You need to negotiate, and if you fail to reach a settlement with yourself, you need to move forward and ballot for industrial action. And it's like this thing about, there was a low turnout and it doesn't count. You can only count the votes of people who vote. You can't make any assumption that because people don't vote, they're against the strike. It would be an extraordinary voting system in which you hazard a guess at the opinion of people who don't vote and assume that they are all on your side. It would be quite a weird way of doing
it. But also the government arguing that the unions lacked a mandate for the strike as it's, based on a ballot conducted years ago which had a low turnout. You think, glass houses, Mr Cameron, glass houses.
It's depressing as well, because whether you'd like agree with strikes or not, it's nice to know where people stand, and you'd think the Labour Party, being the party of Labour, the party of the Labour movement, ought to be supporting workers. And Miliband's quote on this was just the most depressing thing in the world. It was, will I support the strikes? No. Do I condemn the strikes? No. Is there any point in me being alive?
No.
Well, just go home.
He's so worried about people saying that, you've got your union paymasters. Well, he has got union. That is the point. The Labour Party is, as Hugo points out, called the Labour Party because it was founded by organised labour. It wasn't founded in a birthing pool.
People have more trust in union leaders than they do in politicians. And I have to say, as a parent, every other parent I know is completely on side. And it's a sweetly delusional thing that Michael Gove thinks he is loved by teachers and parents alike. And he is, the way that he rouses even a News Quiz audience who are, hard to anger unless there's, a rise in the price of Bowdoin or something.
spokesman said that nearly all key public services are being delivered as usual. I thought it rather suggested that no one was planning to empty my bin, even if they had come to work.
Yeah, it was July the 10th, wasn't it, the strike? It's end of term. Realistically, the only impact that the strike will have had on those school children is that they would have had to play their board games at home.
Strikes have taken place across the UK after a mass walkout of public sector staff over pay, pensions and cuts. Firefighters, librarians and teachers are amongst those taking part in what could be the biggest strike since 1926. The strike of 1 million public sector workers was immediately undermined by a private company who announced it could do the same strike with half as many people. The Work claims that the strikers didn't have a legitimate mandate, which was also one of my family's concerns about me before I broke them the news. Points to Andy. Hugo, which saga might end with the butler not doing it?
Oh, this is a nice, jolly topic. This is the appointment of Dame Butler Sloss to head up our grand unified inquiry into almost everything that's happened in Britain in the last 50 years, penned off the many disturbing child abuse allegations. There is upset because Dame Butler Sloss has been appointed to head this inquiry. She's a judge. And her brother, Lord Havers, was Attorney General at a point in the 80s, I believe, when various allegations that are being made again now weren't followed up. And Dame Butler Sloss says, well, be that as it may, she didn't know anything about these allegations or why they weren't followed up. So the idea now, anyway, is that because she is in the establishment, and this is an inquiry into the establishment, she's not the right person to head it. Although that means we're sort of looking for a judge who is not a member of the establishment, which is going to be hard. But I was thinking maybe Judge Judy? or a guy called Judge Reinhold, who, if you remember, played Billy in Beverly Hills Cop.
Yeah.
You could get the X Factor judges, couldn't you?
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
Or the ones from The Voice, because the thing is, they're unbiased because they always sit with their back to everything.
Isn't the problem with... I mean, I'm sure she is a magnificent judge, but the problem is, isn't it, that somewhere in this massive swathe of evidence, given that, as I understand it, the inquiry goes back to the 1400s now, somewhere in there, given that Lord Havers was Attorney General during a period when a lot of the allegations are being made, his name is going to come up, isn't it, even if it comes up. And it's, what's she going to do? Is she going to say, I'll just leave the room for this bit. Give me the gist.
Well,
I can't imagine nobody thought of that.
Well,
it seems odd.
Supporters, this is extraordinary. Supporters say that Baroness Butler Sloss will make a good fist of a wide-ranging probe. Now, I'm just suggesting maybe a new press spokesperson. Andy Coulson has got time on his hands.
It was great that they thought they should have some defence for the Havers family, and, of course, one of them, the only other one that anyone's heard of course, is Nigel Havers, renowned actor. And so he was on the PM programme, sort of just, OK, well, I think this is all a ballyshower of a lot of hoo-ha about nonsense. And my aunt, who is a wonderful woman, and he's whittling on. And he said, well, I wasn't really around very much in the 80s because I was blissfully making movies. And I thought, oh, yeah, Nigel, all those movies you made, Nigel, yeah, all those great movies you were in.
We don't need an overarching inquiry to tell us if there was a cover-up, how a cover-up works. We know how cover-ups work. We're British. We know exactly how they work. An allegation is made, and then everyone starts to watch their backs, and then it's referred upwards until it meets the self-interested, possibly Masonic individual who picks up a phone and says, look here, old chap, I wonder if maybe we could make this one go away. You all right for golf on Friday? That's how cover-ups work. Having an inquiry, it just means that, the inquiry and the police investigation will just get in each other's way. Also, with all due respect to Dame Butler Sloss, she's 80. This inquiry is going to take decades.
I think that's the idea.
That's the plan.
Do you think that is the plan?
I think they'll be turning the heating off in her office while she's going through the paper.
They will hand it over to Nigel Havers. There is, you do sort of go, actually, this idea that there's sibling loyalty in politics. You go, yeah, but look at the Miliband.
Nobody ever announced an inquiry because they wanted to find something out. I mean, that would be absurd.
No, that's ridiculous. Yeah. Well, it's like Leveson sorting the press out.
Yeah,
absurd.
Yeah. I thought about this, and I thought, is it reasonable that the state could have lost all this stuff in the sort of latter half of the 20th century. And then I thought, well, they lost Hong Kong and they're about to lose Scotland.
India. Lost as well.
They've got a point.
I'm going to give an extra point if anybody can tell me what Foreign Office files have been extraordinarily corrupted this week.
Oh, is there water damage to...
Is it Diego Garcia?
But I'm going to give you the point because you headed us in the right direction. But I love this story. The Foreign Office have claimed that files relating to alleged extraordinary rendition flights in and out of the British territory of Diego Garcia sadly can no longer be read due to water damage. They're even waterboarding the records now. although she's only just been appointed, there have been calls for Lady Butler Sloss to step down as chair of the inquiry into how public institutions handled abuse allegations because her late brother, Lord Havers, was Attorney General during the period many of the allegations were made. Butler Sloss's late brother, Lord Havers, has been accused by many of exercising bad judgment after it was revealed that he actively encouraged his son Nigel to pursue an acting career. 2 points to Hugo and an extra point to Lucy. Jeremy, listen to this. Jeremy, who isn't leading the charge on airport security?
Budget airlines. Mm. This is a marvellous story because most of the airlines are bringing in this new thing that you, if you've got an electronic device, like a bomb or something like that, you've got to turn it on at the airport to show that it's a bomb. Now, if I was doing the security at the thing and you think someone might have a bomb, I'd say... You're fine, mate. Just go through. Go through and walk away as fast as you can. The plane's in that direction. Just don't blow me up. But if you're particularly stupid, you say, I think that might be a bomb. Can you press that button on it, please? And so this is the idea that because they can now hide a bomb in pretty much anything, so if your things run out of battery, you're in trouble and they're going to find ways around it, having chargers there and all sorts of things like that. But the budget airlines are saying... We can't be arsed with all that nonsense. Look, if you want free alcohol and security, go to British Airways. If you just want to get to your destination quickly and cheaply and take a bit of a gamble on being blown out of the sky. Because everything is extra. That's the thing, you think that you're getting a good deal. When you go Ryanair, you click on Ryanair, and you think, oh, that's good, London to San Francisco, 48 pence. And then it says, would you like to book a seat? And you think, well, that's a long time to stand up. I probably should do that. And that's, oh, that's only another 590 quid. But that's fine, because the flight's only 48p. And then it says, would you like the plane to be refuelled before takeoff? You say, what the hell? We're on holiday. Let's push the boat out.
It will get to the point where only terrorists will be asked to fly. It'd be a lot easier to just go, well, if you want to fly that much, you've got to have some devious intent, surely.
Yeah, and the thing is, you can always blow yourself up in the car park. You can blow yourself up. This isn't a suggestion. What I'm saying is... If somebody has got a bomb and you say, that's a bomb, they're not going to say, well, you caught me, banged your arch there, Governor. Looks like the game's up, chaps. You're not going to do that, are you? You're going to blow it up, aren't you?
But do you think it would take a bomb to destroy an EasyJet plane? I think if you push your tray table up too hard into the... I was at the Hay Festival and I was asked by the director, Peter Florence, if I would assist with an event. And I said, oh, what is this? He said, we've got the world's leading bomb disposal expert on and he needs a bit of help. I think the item might be a bit dry and boring. I said, well, it depends how good he is. Most exciting event you've ever had. Anyway, he said, just go out onto the stage and do whatever, as director. So I go out on the stage and there's the man at the lectern and there's two chairs on the stage set up as if it was a sort of plane. And on one chair is sitting somebody with a bomb around their middle and wearing a balaclava. So the man said to me, oh, hello, Sandy. So you get on a plane and you sit down, you notice the person next to you has got a bomb strapped to their middle. And I said, I'm awfully sorry to interrupt your flow, but I think the first thing I'd notice is the balaclava because if I can't get through security with my shoes on, how the hell have they got through?
It's slightly odd that we've gone from like a situation where you weren't allowed to turn your phone on to a situation where you have to turn your phone on. But you wonder how much good this is going to do. Because I remember a few years ago, the big thing they were worried about were people putting bombs inside themselves. Because there was this guy who blew himself up, and I think it was in Saudi Arabia.
In a body cavity. Was
it he'd packed a lot of explosives in his natural pocket, shall we say. but he'd also managed to put a phone up there.
Wow.
Yeah, because someone had to phone it to blow it up, because he obviously couldn't do it himself. And he got in to meet some sort of senior minister. And you think you've spent a long time with a lot of stuff being stored up there.
I like natural pocket. I always thought natural pocket would be like a health food shop pitter. I'm going to use that every day.
He was the brother of this master bomb maker that they say they're after, isn't he, this chap?
I thought you were pointing at me.
No, yeah. No, I just remember, because what happened was that the human body is actually very absorbent. So this man with the bomb inside him detonated the bomb and basically just kind of melted, just imploded.
Oh, wow.
And it was a bit of an anticlimax. Everyone just presumably thought, oh, poor man. He's not very well. Look at him. He just...
Is that amazing?
Yeah.
Is that like what happens when you hold in a sneeze? I always think that's...
I reckon if you'd somehow got a phone stuck up your bottom, you'd be so embarrassed that rather than go to casualty and try and explain it, you'd just blow yourself up. I sat down too quickly, I'd forgotten to put my pants on, and I'd left the phone. All the jokes you're going to get in casualty, did you reverse the charges? I mean, you're just not... You're not going to put yourself through that, are you?
But they've tried... What did we have? We had the pants bomber, didn't we? Mm-hmm. And then we had the shoes. I think cummerbunds. I think if you sit next to a man who looks like he's dressed for the opera and his midriff starts smoking, you should be suspicious.
We're certainly on Ryanair or EasyJet.
New airport security checks whereby all electronic devices must be charged and working aren't being imposed by budget airlines, added to confusion about where the restrictions are actually in force. Passengers of other airlines have been told they must be able to switch on a mobile phone to prove it works, although fortunately for customers of EE, you don't need to prove you can get reception. Both British Airways and Virgin Atlantic have said they will store devices that can't be taken on board until a passenger's return, which is seen as bad news for those who want to blow up a plane, but good news if you want to blow up an airport. Alternatively, the device can be forwarded to an address of the passenger's choice. So, bad news if you want to blow up a plane, good news if you want to blow up any address in the UK. 2 points to Jeremy. At the end of round one, the scores are Andy and Hugo have got 4 points, but Lucy and Jeremy are in the lead with 5. We start round two with a cutting from Cruise News.
50% watch sale. Today we have a selection of watches from Rotary, Accurist and Seconda, all reduced by 50%. These watches are predicted to go very fast.
Our thanks to Jill Brent for sending us that. Lucy, who took a liberty with their tax affairs?
The celebrity world of tax avoidance. And it's people like George Michael, Katie Melua, the Arctic Monkeys, all pop stars. I do feel a little bit sorry for them. Katie Melua, this idea that she's sort of defrauded us, that she's cheated on her tax, she's just not very good at counting. Because she did that song 9 Million Bicycles in Beijing. There's not.
Yeah.
I did think, you know, when Jimmy Carr was being investigated, I did go to my accountant, Tom. Hi, Tom. And I did say, listen, I just want to make sure that I'm, you know, paying everything because it doesn't look like I'm paying enough tax. And he just went, Lucy, you don't pay much tax because you don't earn very much. You need to do more telly. That was his thing.
I would like my money to be sheltered, though. I like the idea of it having a special bank account where it's independent, but it's got an alarm.
When you hear tax shelter, you do think of something corrugated iron, don't you, that you can sit under. There was the Times headline was Loan Shark Rapist Joined Pop Stars in Tax Shelter. You thought, I bet that was a night to remember.
The whole language of it is very amusing, I think, because they were talking about this thing called aggressive tax avoidance. And I didn't realise tax avoidance came in so many different moods. I wonder if there's passive-aggressive tax avoidance where you don't pay your tax, but somehow you make the government feel like it's their fault.
People talk such drivel and poppycock about this, Sandy, because they say, well, you'd pay 5% tax if you could, and it's like, well, yes, but you know, I'd be dictator of the world if I could, and gold statues of myself in every city, but it doesn't mean I approve of a system in which other people get to do it. it's why something like an ISA is different. It's like, yes, people use ISAs, and that's a means of avoiding tax, but anyone can do it. That's the whole point. You know, and this is means of tax avoidance that are only for the super rich, which is why it's not fair, and it's why it should be, like, you know, kind of shameful to do it. And like companies do it too. You get all the coffee shops going, well, we license our coffee from Amsterdam. It's not a dog. You don't license your coffee from Amsterdam. It's like 20% foamy milk and 70% urban affectation, and you don't need to license it from anywhere. And next you'll be saying you license those little pencils you use to write my name wrong on your stupid cups. I mean, they should pay up lots and lots of money. And if they like, they can get a loyalty card for it. And if not, they should piss off.
I think...
This has nothing to do with the tax thing. I want to know if anybody tells the truth when they say, what's your name for the coffee? Because I don't want them shouting my name out in the shop.
I always say I'm Sandy Toksvig.
HMRC have got this thing now that they want to do where they can... People who refuse to cough up, and they're not big owers, but people who owe a few grand and they're not paying it, they will be able to take it straight out of their accounts. And apparently this is against Magna Carta, and this is the big shock.
Are you telling me Magna Carta mentions online banking?
the really disturbing aspect of this story is that, you know, quite rightly, the Inland Revenue are going to make these people pay the millions that they owe, which is a hell of a lot of new Gary Barlow singles.
They could form a super group, couldn't they?
Wouldn't that be fantastic?
Just doing songs about how great it is to pay your tax. Right. So, yeah, we could have the Casey Melua at Arctic Monkeys take that. Pay your tax, kids. It's super cool. I'm not a songwriter.
A leaked document to the Times newspaper has revealed that over 1,600 people, including pop stars and criminals, tried to shelter over £1.2 billion in the Liberty Strategy, one of Britain's most aggressive tax avoidance schemes. For anyone not familiar with it, Liberty Tax Strategy is where investors hide their money in Shami Chakrabarti. Also this week, HMRC have been accused of riding roughshod over Magna Carta after announcing plans to raid the bank accounts of tax debtors. Magna Carta protected citizens' rights from plundering kings. These days, if a royal relieves you of a fortune, at least you get a packet of organic biscuits in return. Sir Michael Caine's involvement was detailed underneath a picture of him with David Cameron. Caine said he was deeply embarrassed and filled with regret, promising never again to have his picture taken with the Prime Minister. 2 points to Lucy. Jeremy, which squares think it's time to get Elmo fired?
This is Times Square, which is in America. And, this is a good story, because there are these people that dress up in Times Square and as cartoon characters. These people in costume come up to you and then they say, we would like our picture taken with you, which is a bit of a weird, random thing to say to a stranger, but you kind of go, OK. And then they demand money from you, but they have no superpowers, really, so that all they can do is slap you about a bit. But apparently people are getting quite menaced by... And some of them are just Sesame Street and Muppets characters, which aren't... The animal is quite menacing, but, you know, Bert and Ernie, you wouldn't get that intimidated. But they're panhandlers, which is a brilliant American term. But what's happened is that people are getting worried that because there's so many people, for example, dressed as Spider-Man, if you need the real Spider-Man, you won't know which one it is and you'll go up to a panhandler. But Americans are brilliant at begging because, you know, in New York or something, someone will come up and say, look, I'm not going to lie to you. I'm thrown out by my wife. I was a bad husband. I was off my head on crack cocaine. She threw me out. I'm struggling to get myself back on my feet. I get a few dollars so I can get a shelter. And, you know, whereas here, someone comes up and says, I need to go to a hospital because I'm dying and I need to call an ambulance, but I'm allergic to phone boxes. Can you give me £20 for a taxi? And you think, you're just a rubbish beggar. At least have the decency to say you want some cider and I'll go with you and we'll spend some time in the park and hang out.
But it's also that these characters are behaving badly. There was two Statue of Liberties were brawling, which I quite like. And Woody from Toy Story was seen urinating against a building in I have to say, I can relate to that. I was once accosted by a raging Woody, although that is what happened.
When I went to Glastonbury a couple of years ago, I did a big article on how it all worked, and I went to see like the kind of the infrastructure centre and the hospital they have there where people kind of give birth, and they have an on-site police station. And I got shown around by this young constable from Portishead, not the band, who took me around and sort of pointed out everything. And she was telling me that they patrol the grounds a bit and sometimes they have people kind of sort of undercover to see if they can spot sort of, you know, any particularly dangerous drug things going on. And she showed me where the horses were kept and she showed me the cells and she goes, and now I'll show you the briefing room. And she opens this door and I look into the briefing room and then she pulls it shut quickly and going, oh, you shouldn't have seen that. And what I'd seen that I shouldn't have seen was about 20 policemen sitting around staring at a screen at which there were three people dressed as Super Mario Brothers and a man pointing at them gravely with a stick. And I have never known why. Who they were? Were they like the sort of the drug dealers they were after? Was it the chief constable in disguise? No idea. Nothing.
I love you saying Portishead, not the band. I had no idea there was a band called Portishead.
See, I had no idea beforehand there was a place called Portishead.
Oh, so very nice. New York City Council are promising to crack down on costumed characters in Times Square who demand tips from tourists in return for having their photos taken. A survey of local people revealed that half had had an unpleasant interaction with a costumed character. A few months ago, a man dressed as Elmo was arrested for blocking traffic on Broadway while shouting out, "I hate the Jews," one of Sesame Street's more controversial songs. The only other Muppet known to have strong views on Judaism is Kermit the Frog, who insists there's nothing wrong with eating pork. Two points to Jeremy. Before we reveal the scores, has anybody got a cutting that they would like to share?
I've got one from Mr. John Reeves. It's a small ad from the Surrey and Hants Star. Wanted. Large unwanted suitcases.
Anybody else? Lucy.
Okay, this is just quite a sweet one, I thought. And it was sent by Julian Nangle of Nangle Rare Books. A label on a 1 litre bottle of Gordon's gin I bought in the Co-op reads, "Warning, this product is protected by a security device which is deactivated when purchased. Remove this label before microwaving."
Mr. Rifkin.
This is sent in by Jonathan Hilditch from Solihull, and it's a headline from the Daily Telegraph. Government advisor says, give primary school pupils lessons on drugs.
Anything from you, Mr. Hardy?
Sadly, whoever sent this, we don't know because it's not attached to the bit of paper, and we don't even know what it's from, but it appears to be a newspaper article about an inspection of an academy school. It says, Mr. Miller described the school as having terribly low literacy levels, poverty like I've never seen. The academy has also wasted more than £50 million on an open-plan school building with no walls. One in six pupils plays truant regularly.
Let's take a look at the final score. Andy and Hugo have got 12 points, but this week's winners are Lucy and Jeremy with 13. Before we leave you, here is a cutting from the Bristol Post sent in by Helen Williams.
Testicular ball to be held in aid of charity.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Andy Hamilton, Hugo Rifkind, Lucy Porter and Jeremy Hardy. In the chair was Sandy Toksvig, and the news was read by me, Cathy Clugston. The chair script was written by Roderick Crooks, Lucy Clark and Andy Walton, with additional material by Gabby Hutchinson-Crouch and Max Davis. The producer was Lindsay Fenner.